Hello, this is Kathy Shostak, Vice President for Healthcare Risk Management at Sedgwick. This podcast covers the safe use of health information technology, or health IT, for patient identification. The risks of patient identification errors is the topic of the winter 2017 issue of the Sampo International Insight and Perspectives newsletter. Today we're talking with Dr. Lorraine Cosanza. She's the director for the Gordon and Betty Moore Grant-Funded Partnership for Health IT Patient Safety, a collaborative, multi-stakeholder project focused on identifying ways to mitigate health IT safety issues while fully utilizing the capabilities of the technology to enhance patient safety. Lorraine joined ECRI Institute in 2013 as a senior patient safety, risk, and quality analyst, working with the clinical risk management team and later focused on the nascent partnership. Lorraine has over 25 years of experience in healthcare as a surgical podiatrist, as the director of risk management, and as well as an attorney supporting healthcare providers and facilities in her role as counsel and regulatory advocate for physicians and health systems, and as a bioethicist. So, Lorraine, can you give a brief overview about the partnership?
Thanks, Kathy. I'd be happy to. ECRI Institute curates the Partnership for Health IT Patient Safety, which began back in 2013. The Partnership for Health IT Patient Safety is a collaborative program, as Kathy mentioned, and it's for sharing and analyzing health IT-related patient safety hazards and events. Those hazards are those precursors to events. And it's all done in a non-punitive learning environment. It really leverages the efforts of health information technology developers, patient safety organizations, hospitals, ambulatory care providers, policymakers, patient advocates, risk and safety experts, and others. And the overall goal of the partnership is really to make health IT safer together. So typically, the partnership does its work through multi-stakeholder work groups. And one of the topics we focused on was really looking at the safe use of health IT for patient identification.
I see. So why is patient identification an issue from the perspective of health IT?
So patient identification errors really occur for multiple reasons. They occur because we're in a harried, time-constrained environment, because oftentimes we use batch processes. We do try to do multiple things together. There's distractions that are frequently available in the workplace. People are tired. They're patient characteristics, patients that have similar or the same names. Identity theft has become an ongoing issue with patient identification. And oftentimes we have multiple charts open. And there tends to be less communication these days, person to person. All those things happen in every aspect of the healthcare system, whether it's that registration area, the treatment or care or testing areas in either ambulatory care or acute care or long-term care settings. And they occur after the fact, too, when you're looking at referrals and consultations and patient portals or pharmacies or whether or not you're using a health information exchange.
I see. So can you give us some examples of how errors occur in these settings?
Certainly, Kathy. It's best sometimes to drive the point home by using some specific examples. So we tend to use technologies these days to help identify patients. But if you happen to scan the wrong patient ID when you're trying to, you know, order a test or get the result posted on a test. So, for example, in one issue, they scanned the wrong patient ID for a pregnancy test. And what happened is the result ended up on a male patient's chart. Not a good indicator. In another example, patient was preparing for a surgical procedure, and they were about to have an MRI, and the MRI technician began to ask information about what appeared on the patient's chart. So they asked about cardiac issues, and the mom began to answer the questions and said, you know, no, my child hasn't had any cardiac issues and has not undergone any cardiac procedures. And then the mom remembered that the uncle actually has the same name and a similar birth date to her child, and that's the chart that they had actually pulled. And this has additional consequences besides the fact that you may have the wrong patient and be recording the wrong information. It also decreases the patient's confidence in the system when you're not speaking about the correct patient at the correct time.
Yes, I can see that. And so that helps us listen to our patients instead of just what the computer has on the screen. Is this a large topic? And so how did the work group get their arms around this issue if it happens in so many ways, in so many areas across the spectrum of healthcare?
Patient ID is really a very complex issue, and it's really a multiphasic step approach that you need to take. So what the work group did when it really looked at the information, and it had a lot of information to look at. It had an evidence-based clinical review. It had a patient deep dive that was done by ECRI Institute PSO, which looked at over 7,000 events. And then it looked at how are we going to break this down and take this all this information and pull it together to identify the right approach. And we took a three-phase approach. We looked at catching. How is the information being gathered? You know, so what are you looking at to begin with? Matching. How do you match that information that you have in front of you with the right individual so that you can ensure that you have the right patient receiving the right care at the right time? And then how are people seeing that information? How is it being displayed? Is that information clear? In those drop-down lists, are you seeing that actual patient information, or is it easy for a provider or a registration individual to have problems selecting the correct person because maybe there's not enough white space or the names are not clear enough or perhaps they're truncated? So we really took that three-phase approach and then focused on particular areas.
I see. So across this catching, matching, and display framework then, where can improvements be made that the partnership report details?
So two of the areas that the partnership really looked at for things that technology could help us with were really those attributes, that information that's being gathered, and where and how it's being gathered, what kind of fields and formats we're using, and what standard information we're looking at, and then technology. And that's ways to really use what's presently available or what may become available to really facilitate patient ID. And that's simple things such as photographs, which are pretty common today, or looking at things like algorithms, so those matching algorithms that not everybody currently uses, to looking at more advanced things like biometrics, which would include things like iris scans or fingerprints or palm vein scanning or facial recognition. All of those things today I think we've all become more familiar with because we've been introduced to them via the use of our cell phones.
So can you comment on the recommendations made to improve data attributes?
So we came up with eight recommendations altogether, four for attributes and four for technology. And I'll really focus on the attribute recommendations today, primarily because they're things that most of us can really work on at present. So one of the things that we recommended was to use some standard identifier conventions. So the fields that are really looking at the patient information, they should really be standard and consistently used so that you're looking at names always the same. So, for example, if you're looking at a last name, you know that the last name always appears first and it appears in all capital letters, and that's followed by the first name, and that the information that you're gathering is always the same. So are you gathering the patient's first and last name, their cell phone number, or another particular close identifier that besides maybe their date of birth and their home address? Because those things tend to change, whereas people have found that cell phone numbers these days tend to stay fairly consistent. Then we basically want to use a confirmation process. So as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, fatigue and distraction are often present when we're trying to either register patients in an intake area, either in a physician's office or in an active environment, in an ambulatory care center or a hospital setting where patients are coming in. Or in addition, it's oftentimes very distracting when providers are writing in a particular record and they get disrupted because someone has just one question to ask. It will only take a moment. We've all heard those kind of interruptions. So one of the things that you may want to incorporate is some kind of confirmation process so that when you go back to that record or you pull up that individual, there's something that's readily available, say a patient's picture, or you're typing in your initials and the patient's initials so that that has to match before you can proceed to write in that chart. So you're not writing information in an incorrect chart and propagating incorrect or inaccurate information. Next, you really want to make certain that the attributes and the formats that you're using them in are always in the same manner, in the same order. So you want to make certain that that information appears the same across all systems. So if you're looking at a patient header in your record, the information always appears consistently. If you're looking at a patient armband in a hospital situation or in a lab testing area, that information always appears consistent and that it's easily recognized and in the same order. So one of the things that we oftentimes will see is maybe it's not so clear whether William Roger is William Roger or Roger William. So you may want to know what's the patient's last name so that you're able to match that correct individual, because you may well have someone with that name in the reverse order, and it gets very confusing if you don't have the correct order and you don't really know where those names belong. And you want to make certain that all of that information is displayed the same no matter what area of the record you are looking at, so that it makes it easier for providers and it also makes it easier for patients that they can look at that information and say, no, that's not my information. I need to correct that.
So I see. What available tools are there to be used today, and can you talk about what the risks and benefits are?
Certainly, Kathy. So, you know, today we have some very simple things that are available. So, for example, wristbands. They're inexpensive, they're often used, they're disposable, and they're used more and more frequently whether you go to a hospital care setting or whether you're even going for an outpatient lab exam or you're undergoing a chemotherapy procedure. People are using your wristbands. But you want to make sure that that information is consistent and available. Now, unfortunately, some places don't use wristbands or they can't use wristbands because maybe the infant's too tiny and the wristband didn't stay on, or they're also easily removable and maybe the patient found it irritating and took it off themselves. So that's one of the drawbacks to using something simple like that. Barcoding has been around for a very long time, but unfortunately there's a limited amount of information that's often able to be encrypted into that barcode, and you need a special barcode reader, so that sometimes makes it different. Increasingly, people are using photographs to help identify patients, and initially this has been very useful. However, you have to say, where is the source of that photo? Are you scanning a license, a driver's license? You know, is there equipment available to either be able to do a scan or to take the photo? And if you're taking photos, is there good lighting so that the photo that you're actually getting is a really good depiction of the patient, so you're not trying to strain to see, well, it kind of looks like that patient, but I'm not exactly sure, because something like that really doesn't help facilitate the process. RFID chips have been used, but they also have limited storage capacities, and they're expensive, and they also have to be within a particular range, so that does have some limitations. And we're seeing, as we've mentioned, a lot more use of biometrics. So everything from iris scanning to facial scans to fingerprints to palm vein scanning. And they're becoming more widely available. They're quick. They're accurate, they're non-invasive, but they do require additional training for the people that are utilizing them. You know, the hope is that some of those technologies will continue to become smaller, more readily acceptable, and that they will be more frequently used to not only identify patients in that intake area, but also to identify patients as they move through the care system.
Oh, that's terrific background. So, Lorraine, in summary, can you go through some things that healthcare organizations can do to reduce risks related to patient identification?
There are several things that organizations and providers and care settings can really look at today. So one of the things is really making certain that you have consistent policies and procedures in place. You know, as I said, providers tend to have multiple areas of intake, especially if you're a large hospital system. You have many places where patients come in and become registered. So you want to make certain that the policies are consistent throughout all those areas and that the information, not only those attributes that are being gathered, like that those identifiers themselves are consistent throughout the organization, but they're collected in the same order, in the same manner, and that the fields and the areas where they're being collected are adequate enough so that names don't have to be truncated. And if you need to work with a vendor, then you know organizations need to really contact their vendor and tell them what their needs are if they have specific needs or they want information to appear in a specific manner, the vendor can really provide assistance in that respect. You know, you may want to use a centralized registration process so that you have one master patient list or index, as they're oftentimes known. And you basically want to use technology once you understand, you know, where its benefits are, and you want to use the appropriate technology in the appropriate area. So, you know, barcoding may be great when you're trying to, you know, confirm medications or, you know, put that information possibly on a patient armband. But, you know, identifying the patient initially, you may want to use technology to help with an algorithm to match the patient to that record that you have in front of you. And you just want to make certain that that information really looks the same throughout the processes, whether it's, you know, a header or an armband. And that's a much bigger project than it sounds. It sounds like it's easy, but it's oftentimes, you know, difficult for everyone to do. But those are things to be aware of moving forward so that really we can drive safer patient care.
All good information, Lorraine. Thank you. I just want to note that our partnership's Safe Practice Toolkit is available, and it can be helpful. It's available online at www.ecri.org/safe-practices. It has audit tools, educational materials, references, recommendations that some of that Lorraine reviewed, along with implementation strategies and other resources available. We hope you've enjoyed this review of Safe IT Practices with regards to patient identification. Thank you for listening.